Well, this is a beautiful sight to me, to be standing in front of this many ministers. I have had to make some choices as to where I would put my time and my energy. I could be involved in a hospital setting, or in a mental health clinic, or in a teaching relationship in a university somewhere. I've had many options like that. What is the most effective use of my time? And the decision that I have made many years ago is that I will cast my lot with the church. I'm for the church. If I were to pick any one segment of society, any one group of people that are involved in helping other people, I would say that the possibilities of being useful to the people of the country rests with the minister. When you stop to think about it, if I were to infiltrate society, and you stop and think about where your people reside and where they work and where they play, there isn't really any more strategic organization to think about using than church. And so I would like to spend this week convincing you, if I have to, that you're a pretty important person. A while ago, I was talking to some ministers about counseling. And this man was asking me whom he could recommend in his community as a helping person for some of the people who are disturbed and upset. And my answer was, the first person I would think about if I were you would be you. Now, it's interesting to me that so many ministers have the idea that when people are really upset, really mixed up, fortunately, you have somebody that has a higher power than you to send them to. And that's me. And I want to say at the outset that that's a fallacy. And I tried to say to this minister, what would be more therapeutic in your judgment for this person that you're thinking about to spend 1 hour a week with me or 1 hour a week with you? Is it more beneficial to spend 1 hour a week with a man who's not a Christian? Or is it more beneficial to spend 1 hour a week listening to you preach? Which would be more beneficial? That's a good question, isn't it? I think it's much more beneficial to hang around a properly oriented minister than anybody else. And I'd like to spend my time sharing with you how you can be more effective in your ministry to other men. I was reading in my Bible one time, and this comment struck me. This is the Apostle Paul writing to the Romans. And when I read some of his statement, he has to be one of the greatest egotists in the Scriptures, because he constantly keeps referring to the benefits of being around him. Now, really, that's the idea, that's the name of the game, isn't it? That our lives are devoted to being the kind of person that it's worthwhile being around. There ought to be something challenging and uplifting and refreshing to be around me, shouldn't there? Otherwise, why would I be here? Or why would you be where you are if that were not true? Well, this is what he says to the Romans. This is in the first chapter of Romans, starting with the 11th verse. He says, I long to see you. You know, that's a little different than saying, oh no, tomorrow's Sunday again. I long to see you. I just can't wait to get together with you. What for? That I may impart unto you some spiritual gift, to the end that you may be established. Isn't that great? Now that's a little different than the idea of, who are you? What makes you think that you have anything to offer to me? Why would you assume that people can benefit by being around you? Now, we need to have an answer to that question, and obviously the answer is, you are the most knowledgeable person in the community about what the Bible has to say to men. Isn't that right? Isn't that your work? Now, when I need legal help, I suppose it would be much cheaper to discuss my legal problems with you than with a lawyer. Except you wouldn't be much use to me. But it would be cheaper. If I need, some advice on my tax problems, I suppose you have some knowledge about that, don't you? I'm sure you could give me sympathy. But really, even though it would be economically to my advantage to discuss my tax problems with you, it probably wouldn't be very beneficial. And I surely wouldn't recommend that anybody come to me with their tax problems. You go to an attorney because you assume that he's up on his profession. You go to a CPA because you assume that he is up on his profession. Now, what is yours? You're the pro. You're the most knowledgeable person in the community on what the Bible has to say to me. Right? And what else, what better time could be spent than around somebody who is knowledgeable about what God has to say to me through the Scriptures? So when we talk about spending time, obviously the major time for you would be to keep up to date on what God has to say through His Word. And at least that's what I expect from you if I talk to you. But here's the Apostle Paul, who knows his business. He knows what he can do. And he is saying here that one thing that he can do is to impart unto you some spiritual gift to the end that you may be established. Now that's a wonderful thing, to have the reputation of being the kind of person that if you're shaky and if you're uncertain, and if you want to think something through, and if you want to get established, go see you. When it comes to being settled in spiritual things, and what a wonderful thing. I long to see you. I just love my work, in other words. That I may impart unto you some spiritual gift to the end that you may be established. That is, that I may be comforted together with you by the mutual faith of both you and me. And it's a wonderful, comforting thing to me to watch men grow. Now, Dr. Bright has mentioned that we've been associated for maybe 15 years. And I can still remember the first time we met. It was in Minnesota. And I was speaking at another conference, and they asked me if I would come over to this Campus Crusade staff meeting. And so I went over there. I never heard of this outfit before. And these people were assembled in a moderately sized living room. The whole staff fit into that living room. I don't know, 20 maybe? And this fellow was telling me, and I've been working with mission boards for years, selecting staff, and, And I have some idea of the expectations that a lot of people have in attracting people to their organizations. Well, this fellow, Bright, was telling me that he was praying that the Lord would double his staff. And I, driving home, was saying to my wife, you know that fellow? He's a dreamer. He's got 20 people on his staff. Imagine that. He's asking the Lord to double his staff. That would make 40. Well, now my point is that I have seen Bill Bright's faith grow. And talking about 40 staff today is a little bit of faith as far as he's concerned. But to see his faith grow and to see his ministry grow. And this has been my privilege across the years, watching many, many people's faith grow and their ministry grow and watching men become established and mellow across the years. And this is what he is saying, that this is one of the benefits to him of ministering to people. That is, that I may be comforted together with you by the mutual faith of both you and me. Now, that's not what I hear all the time from ministers. I have ministers come to me and say, Doc, how do I get in on what you're doing? I'd like to be a counselor like you. You see, I'd like to do something useful too. Now, how about that? Well, it sure makes a difference what you think of yourself, doesn't it? And what you think of your work and the nature of your work. And let's just look at that a little bit in the time that I have this morning. In my experience, I started a private practice that grew to the point where we were seeing 1,000 people a month. So I listen to every kind of a story there is. And I learned what it is that people do to get themselves in trouble. And as you know, many of us work awfully hard at it. And we do the things that will cause us trouble. And I've also learned across the years what people can do to straighten out their trouble. And a lot of my practice was built upon referrals from ministers. I found that ministers were trained to make referrals. A real professional minister makes referrals. And if someone is weeping, if someone is tense and anxious and worried and upset, that's out of your field. Isn't it? It just seemed like that's the way the ministers saw things. That fortunately, in their community, they had this Christian counseling clinic where people could come when they needed help. And the minister conceived himself as the one to channel them over to our office. And many times I would sit behind my desk and listen to this story and say to myself, isn't it too bad that this person's minister isn't listening to this story? And I become the important person in their life. And across the years, I've watched this emphasis grow, that if you need help, it's not in the church. If you want to help people, get them out of the church. Get your activities out of the church. Get your counseling clinic away from the church. And you know, if you aren't careful, pretty soon we identify the church with bondage. We identify the church with empty routine. And this began to dawn on me. And I used to have some clients that were ministers. I've had, that's been one of my specialties. Especially ministers who are in a building program. And I've talked to many who talk to me about the burdens of a building program. Well, I am a builder, and I know something of the burdens of building. In fact, about 6 weeks ago, I'm building some apartment houses, and a tornado came through our community, and we had this big 24-unit apartment building, three stories high, roof on, windows in. And this tornado came through and picked up our building and threw it down as though some giant had just flattened that thing. And it was so flat that I could look over the top of it. The burdens of life are light if you know where to take them. And so I've had the wonderful experience of reminding many a minister what to do with his burdens in his own book. And as a result, I began getting invitations to speak. Would you come speak in my church? Or would you come and speak at our ministerial association or at this summer retreat? And I found that somehow my clients began to come from these places where I would speak. And I would ask, how come you're coming here? You know what they told me? Because you're the one that warmed my heart. So I began to get interested in this process of warming people's hearts. How is it that you can challenge somebody and encourage somebody and help somebody, like in this room? Where there's a head back there, and I can't even see the features of your face. And isn't it amazing that I can move your soul with these lips up here? And people began to come to me and say, you never met me, but I just want you to know that you gave me some tips that changed my life. How about that? Somebody way, way back there in an audience. I met a man one time who said, I just want to meet you because your messages have changed my life. And you know where he heard those messages? Over the radio. And I began to wonder. I had the notion that it's a break for people to sit across the table from me. You know, that's what we say, isn't it? The important place is when you sit across the table from one of your people. You even hear folks say nowadays, isn't it too bad that we've built these great big church buildings? These big auditoriums. Why these big auditoriums? People don't want to listen to sermons anymore these days. These big Sunday school plants. People don't want to study anymore. What is the important room in a church? Well, obviously, it's the study. That's the important room, when you have a one-to-one relationship with people. And I believe that. And yet, to my amazement, here's a man whose life has changed because he listened to a radio. I was in Australia last year, and there were a bunch of people met together in a house one night. And these were all people whose lives had been blessed because they heard some cassettes of mine. Now, I had never been in Australia before. And I had no idea that any of my cassettes were in Australia. And here was this group of people, one man saying that I was struggling with very severe emotional problems and I'm stable today. Here's a couple that comes up and says, our marriage was saved as a result of listening to these messages. And you know what had happened? There was a Texan went through there. And he ran into some people in his church who were talking about a cassette ministry. And Bill said, I know just the tapes you need. And one day in the mail, here came a great big pile of Bill Bright's tapes and Henry Brandt's tapes. And these people bought some cassette players and scattered those tapes out across that area. The power of the word. Isn't that something? People's lives transformed and changed by the word. Well, when I was a student back right after World War II, preparing to become a psychologist, and I was working for the Veterans Administration. Some of you gentlemen were in World War II, and many of our veterans came home, and they were very nervous and tense and easily upset. So the Veterans Administration set up a very extensive counseling program all around the country, and I was one of those counselors. And we were drawing some conclusions in the mental health business in those days. And one of the conclusions was that one of the very negative factors in our country was churches. Our GIs came home and went to church and heard these fiery preachers preaching about sin. And it upset our GIs. Remember those days? And the mental health people said, the trouble with you preachers, that is that you're upsetting our country. You're making people feel sinful. Now you got to get positive. You've got to get sympathetic. And another one of the problems with you people in churches is that you're too rigid. You got too many rules, and you got too many standards, and you have all these expectations, and you're making nervous wrecks out of our GIs. And I watched a process begin of talking preachers out of preaching. Remember those days? Our preaching ought to be soothing. Our preaching ought to be non-committal. Now, when I speak rather specifically and directly and use a lot of illustrations, and I've had ministers say, I wouldn't dare speak like you. Why not? Because I'm afraid my people would think that I was preaching to them. Now, you know, if your objective is to preach a sermon that doesn't apply to anybody, you're quite likely to reach your objective. And so that's what began to happen. Now, it didn't make any difference, it didn't seem, whether these GIs were in fact sinful or not. And I want to tell you that they were. And a lot of these young men, the way they conducted themselves across the water some way, they found out that they were bringing themselves home. And they had to deal with their sins. But the mental health people pointed out to us that people are no longer sinful, they're only sick. And therefore, you add to their troubles by clarifying for them what sin is and what repentance is and what surrender is. And across the country, I've come across ministers who minimize the power of preaching. No use of preaching to people. They don't want to listen anymore. Well, anyway, I got to preach because of my counseling, and people were inviting me into their pulpits, and especially in some of these summer conferences where I had an opportunity to get people aside and we could interact with each other for a week or so. And I found people coming to me and saying, for instance, my wife and I have been thinking over what you've been teaching us, and we decided that this is what our problem is, and this is the solution that we've come up with, and we just wanted to check it with you. And I slowly conceived in my mind a conviction. And this is my conviction. If a man wants help. Now that's a lot different than if a man just wants to talk over his pet problem. And I have found that we do accumulate pet problems, favorite problems, that we just love to talk about. I know people who've got problems that are 20 years old, and they become precious, something like a family heirloom. And you love, you know, to show people your antiques, don't you? Look at this antique, and you point out all the features of the antique. Well, I've discovered that people like to do that with their problems. Let me tell you about my favorite problem. Now, I think we have to learn to discern the difference between someone who wants help and someone who just wants to talk about his problem. But if a man wants help, and if a man can absorb information, and that's most of us, and if he can reason, he can get all the help he needs from your church program. He doesn't need private consultation. Now, I want to say that over again. I was talking this way once in a church, and the minister came up and said, "Boy, you really crossed me up, because we just put our first full-page ad in the church page yesterday announcing our new counseling program." But I'd just like you to consider this, that if a man wants help, and if he can absorb information, and if he can reason, he can get all the help he needs by himself. You know, I have some literature back there that I would appreciate your buying, because it'll help you. And there's a little pamphlet back there, for instance, for 60 cents on raising children. Now, I hate to tell you this, but you know, you'd get a lot more help out of that 60-cent pamphlet than if you would spend $100 in private consultation with me about children. It's much better organized than our conversation would be. Would you buy that you can get more help out of a 60-cent pamphlet than $100 worth of time with me across the table? And you know, and I know, that all the help that anybody needs is in print today. If you want help, that is. And so I've had to do some thinking about the use of my time. Now you think about your time and the things that you've got to do. And if you were to rank the importance of preaching and teaching and counseling and administration, how would you rank them? You know, it's sort of asking me as a businessman, in your business, what's more important, purchasing or service? Or I'm in a restaurant business, or flavorful food, or quality food, which is the most important? And obviously, you can't, that's not a fair question. There's not much point in producing a lot of food that's not tasty. You just have a lot of food on your hands. And there's not a whole lot of point of purchasing things that you can't move. And so we have to talk about balancing our business. And the purchasing and the cooking and the serving and the public relations, you don't talk about one which is the most important. You talk about a comfortable, reasonable balance among all of those. But nevertheless, if I were to force you to rank preaching, teaching, counseling, and administration, and our subject, of course, this week is administration, which of those would you consider to be the most important? And if my suggestion means anything, if I were you, I would rank them in that order. I can't think of anything any more important for a minister to do than to be a good preacher. When I think of the number of people that have been helped through going through this clinic that I used to have, and the reason that I don't have it today is because I have a time limitation also, and I have to do the things that are the most important. And by the time I get through doing what in my judgment is most important, I haven't got time to be running a counseling clinic because there are more important things to do. And one of the most important to me is to get my message across to the greatest number of people possible. And I believe that to get my message across to the greatest number of people possible is to be here this morning. Just think of the number of people that you all represent. Just think what the number of people that I could reach if I could influence you. I can't think of any more influential audience anywhere than standing in front of a group of preachers like this, who all of you represent. I don't know how many people we would represent potentially that you will reach when you go away from here. But all across the world, I've come across people by the thousands who have said that my life was changed because I heard you speak. Did you get that? Oh, I know how to do the counseling work. I admit that. That's my first introduction with great success. But when I think of the number of people that I have reached through the consulting room in comparison to the number of people that I have reached from the public platform, there's no comparison. And I would like to impress upon you that the most important thing that you can do with your time this week is to have a message burning on your heart next Sunday morning, and you just can't wait for next Sunday morning. As the Apostle Paul said, I just long to see my people next Sunday morning. I remember one young man that I ministered to, a minister, a very hostile minister, an angry minister. He would get up on Sunday morning, and he couldn't wait either to bawl out his people. He was systematically emptying out his church. And this fellow ended up in one of my conferences. And, in the first place, he almost missed it. Because on Monday morning, he and his wife got in a fight over what time to leave to get to the conference. And so he wouldn't go. And she said, then sit here, I'm going to go anyway. Now, would you believe that ministers talk to their wives that way and wives talk to their ministers that way? Well, anyway, she came to me the first day very tearfully telling me about
this hard old minister husband of hers. And she can't stand him anymore. And what could I do
to change her husband so that she could be spiritual? And you know, I tried to tell the lady that for you to get the joy of the Lord in your heart involves you and God, doesn't have anything to do with your husband. Isn't that great? Why, she didn't think so. She went away mad. And she cried the whole day. And I discovered that that's a rather pleasant activity for a lot of people. Cry.
Poor me. Let me tell you my favorite problem.
Well, you know, after she spent a day crying, she repented and called up her husband and told him that she was wrong and that she'd gotten straightened out and he ought to get down here. And he didn't want to come. And he called his office to see if they needed him, and they didn't need him. So he came, and he came when I was reading this passage of Scripture in the fourth chapter of Ephesians. Now, mind you, I'm talking about the power of the Word from the public platform. I never met this man for a year afterward. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you. I could well be talking to a mad preacher here this morning. You're mad at somebody, like he was. And the next verse says, be kind one to another and tender-hearted and forgiving, even as God for Christ sake hath forgiven you. And you know, this fellow came in late just as I was reading those verses. Talk about hitting a guy in the teeth. Here comes this mad preacher. And he's only there to get his wife off his back. And he found out that something had happened to her, and he said that he stole out in the woods and he got himself straightened out. And I heard this about a year later when I responded to an invitation to come to this church to preach, and this fellow said, you don't know me, you never met me, but I want to tell you why I invited you to come to my church. Now that happened in a public meeting. And this man's heart was moved, and he repented. And do you know, today, here's a fellow that runs two churches, and they have two Sunday morning service in each one of these churches. This is the fellow that was systematically emptying out his church, who preaches to 3,000 people every Sunday morning, and they have two evening services in each one of these churches. And he started a high school, and he started a college, and he's writing books. This is the same fellow who used to sit in his study and just think bitter thoughts about his people. I am a believer in the power of the spoken word. And I'd just like to urge you to give some thought. How seriously do you take your Sunday morning service? Now, I want to tell you something. And I'm speaking as a layman. I need your services. I'm busy. I have a restaurant business. I have a building business. I have a speaking schedule. And I still do consulting work, and I do some writing, and I have a radio program. I'm busy. And so when I go to church on Sunday morning, and you're going to get a hearing from me, mister, you're going to work at it. Because I got a lot of interesting things to think about at the point where you get dull. And I have done some mighty fine planning on Sunday morning in a church pew while you were speaking. And I think it is important for us to recognize the fact, us, I mean you, that you've got to work at it to keep your people with you. I've learned, for instance, to help sleepy people out. And no matter where I go, some people tend to doze, and it's inconceivable to me that it's because of what I'm saying. I just have the idea that if I'm going to speak, it's worth you listening, and so I've got to help you listen. And I found out that the way to wake a fella up is to direct your voice right at him until he wakes up and get eye contact with him. And generally, they won't go to sleep again. But you see, by that time, somebody over here is dozing. And so you've got to be familiar enough with your material on Sunday morning that you're not fumbling with your material. I was speaking one time at a minister's institute, and there was a fellow there. They said he was a homiletics professor, and I went home after that and looked it up, and now I know what a homiletics professor is. But you know what he said to those people? He said that in any sermon that you preach, you will do well if people retain 10% of what you say. You see, he was making a point that preaching isn't all that important. Then he went on to draw, I think, one of the most curious conclusions. He said that whenever you preach, you want to make sure that you have a brand new, fresh sermon. And I couldn't figure that out. If people retain 10% of what you said, I should think that you'd repeat that sermon about 10 times. And yet I hear men say, oh, I have to have a new sermon because I wouldn't want my people to think that I was repeating. And I say to myself, now isn't that egotism? Imagine this fellow who thinks that people will remember his sermon. I believe one of the problems with a lot of preachers is that they are as strange as I am with their material. And if you're going to help your audience, you have to be familiar with your material. You know what I'd do if I were you? I'd pick out one of my good sermons, you know? One that the people said, that was good. They don't come very often, do they? And it would be a wonderful thing if you just thought through some of your better ones and even announced it. You remember that good sermon I preached? I'm going to preach it again next Sunday. Bring your friends. It'll be worth hearing. Well, I think I've made my point that I need your services, and I have my head full of so many things. And one of the important times of the week for me is the Sunday morning sermon. And I'm really not interested in your reasons why you aren't prepared. You ought to be prepared with a message burning on your soul, realizing that this is the Word of God. And yet I hear men say, I'm only a preacher. That pains me when I hear that. I'm only a preacher. I've even heard men say, I try to even conceal the fact that I'm a preacher because people get uncomfortable around me when they find out that I'm a preacher. You know, there was the day when the preacher stood straight and tall, and he was one of the important people in the community, and he thought he was. Along with the physician and the dentist and the lawyer, and one of the most important people in the community was the preacher, and he used to stand straight and tall and say, I'm a preacher. Remember? And I'd like you to review who you are. One of the most important people in the community with the most important information of anybody else in the community. What is an informed fellow who's an expert on the law of the land? What is he compared to you? Or you take the fellow who knows how to help a man recover physically. We call him a physician. What is his information compared to yours? I'm a preacher. I'm a teacher. And if I were you, I wouldn't let anything interfere with my preparation for next Sunday morning. I'd want to become the best preacher that I could possibly become within the limits of my ability. And if I could stretch my ability in that area, I'd do anything I could to stretch my ability in that area. My ambition would be to be the greatest teacher I could possibly be. And I want to tell you that I've seen more lives change from the teaching podium and from the public platform than I've ever seen change from the consulting room. I'm not minimizing the consulting room. But I've come to realize that when somebody wants help from me, I've learned to ask, have you been in any of my public meetings? Have you read what I wrote? Have you listened to any cassettes? Do that first, and then if you need help, come and see me. I'm persuaded that that's the way to go. Nothing should interfere with your having a message burning on your heart and a good, clean concept of the Word of God. You are the custodian and the distributor of the most important information in the world. What is your stock in trade? You're an expert on what the Word of God has to say. That's what I need from you. I'm only a minister. You know, you got to get used to being a pro, I guess. I know. I've been in meetings. Nobody knew I was a psychologist at first. And then it got around that, you know, there's a psychologist in the crowd. You ought to see what happens to the crowd. Oh, what a... Did I reveal anything with my hands? What have I said? And people get real uneasy, uncomfortable around me. You know, as though I diagnose free. But you see, I represent mental health. I represent wholeness. And so do you. You represent the highest and the holiest and the best. And when people are around a preacher, they check up on themselves. That's why they're uncomfortable. Now, it's a lot different when the guy around you is uncomfortable rather than you being uncomfortable. I'm uncomfortable being a preacher. And I'd like to urge you to straighten up again. Try it out. Just try it out. Look at yourself in the mirror and say, I'm a preacher. Can you think of anything any more important? Now, you can, of course, as I say, this is a class this week on administration. And so I want to urge you to keep administration in perspective. Now, I'm an administrator, too. As I say, I run a building business and I run a restaurant business. So I'm an administrator. Now, the only way that I can be here talking to you is if I order my responsibilities properly. And one of the important points that we're going to make is that management is getting your work done through other people. And what we're going to be thinking about this week is how can we make the church program go on the shoulders of somebody besides you? I have many talks with my general manager, and there was a time when he was collecting problems to bring to me to solve. And I had to explain to him, look, I'm paying you to solve these problems. The day we don't have problems around here, you're the first guy to go. You see, his job is to deal with the problems. His job is to make the business go. Part of his job is to set me free to do my job, which is to be here talking to you. Now, how do you get to the place where you make the wheels turn in your church and still have time to be a dad and a husband and a counselor and a teacher and a preacher? That's our job this week. And my time is up. As you'll notice during the week, I'm not a preacher. I don't have any points. I have 45 minutes. They told me that it's over. And so I'll just stop here and pick it up the next chance I get to talk to you. But keep this in mind as we go through the week. Management is getting your work done through other people so that you can be free to do the things that you alone can do.